coming to you loud and clear from our safe and germ-free homes and on Wisconsin Public Radio. This is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Carl Christensen, filling in again for Tom Clark. And as always, we're here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice, and great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. And as usual, Zorba, we have a few topics to talk about today.
Yes, we're going to talk about intermittent fasting. I've had a lot of patients ask me about it. What's the data behind it? Does it really help you lose weight? Is it good for your body? And then we're going to talk about an interesting article published in the New England Journal of Medicine concerning psilocybin and the use in depression. Some interesting research I think is very important. Psilocybin, of course, comes from magic mushrooms. Issues concerning why we can't study it. Political issues concerning whether or not it actually is useful or not. But we finally have science that's beginning to look at an answer for this. I find it very, very interesting. You're going to want to stay tuned to listen to that.
That's fascinating stuff. And what is the recipe today?
It's going to be on the barbecue, pineapple, chicken kebabs, barbecue time. Actually, in Wisconsin, we barbecue in January. We barbecue in February, March, and April. But
all
we
year.
Really love to barbecue in April and May when we can finally get out the grill, sit outside, even when it's 45 degrees, and share a brew.
800-462-7413 is the number to call where you can leave a voicemail anytime with your question for Dr. Zorba. And then stay tuned. You just might hear yourself on an upcoming episode of
yes,
our show.
Yes, you might. Yes,
just
you might.
Just stay tuned. That's 800-462-7413. I'm also happy to announce later in the show, we'll hear from Chef Tom Clark in his state-of-the-art kitchen, his kitchen of wonders for the recipe segment. All right.
State-of-the-art. Microwave kitchen. The kitchen is surrounded by microwaves.
The microwave museum, right?
It's the microwave museum right with the Happy Face Museum that he also has in his house next to the microwave. You know, I actually went in I think it was in Washington, D.C. This was a Happy Face Museum. You know, the smiley happy face that mm-hmm. you see all over the place, which I can't remember the guy who invented it. He invented it and gave it to the world. He never copyrighted.
Didn't Forrest Gump invent that? I thought that was Forrest Gump.
No, he did not invent it. It was somebody else. But anyway, there was a museum. Yes, that's right. All right, let's get on with the calls.
All right, the Zorba Pastor on Your Health research and response team has been sifting and winnowing through the voicemails you guys have left us. So let's kick things off with a caller from Iowa County, Wisconsin.
I'm calling because a couple times I've had this strange bluish tint to one of my hands, left or right. On occasion, and I'd like to know what that's about. I'll look down at my hand, and it is definitely kind of bluishy purple. And sometimes it's been both hands, and then it just goes away. And I have no other symptoms. I'm 57. I was an athlete most of my life, still very fit, normal weight, healthy, no other conditions. So I'm just curious to know if there's anything I should be concerned about. Thank you.
You know, anytime the skin color changes, people get upset. So do your hands ever change color, Carl?
Not really, unless okay. I get caught doing something.
How about your feet? Do your feet ever change color?
I don't think so, no.
You don't think so? Well, as we get older, sometimes the veins in our body actually become a little bit more distended. They're not quite as robust. And as a result, they can change color when, in fact, what we're doing is we're seeing the fact the veins are pooling blood within their system. And so this particular person, I can't tell for sure. First of all, if it were Raynaud's phenomenon, now Raynaud's is where you have a circulatory issue where basically you often have pain and discomfort. You have a bluish condition in your hands and also in your feet. And there's veins because what happens is the arteries are not quite, and the veins are not quite working in sync. And as a result, it can become painful. And it usually that occurs with cold. So for instance, I have Raynaud's when it's wintertime and I put my hands on the steering wheel, which is why I wear gloves when I put my hands on the steering wheel. And when I bought my next car, I bought it with a heated steering wheel, which basically got rid of the Raynaud's.
You have one of those.
I've got, something? There are times that you shoot for the best, and that's what I decided to do.
Splurge a little.
You got it. Splurge when you can and when you need it. I mean, there are wants and needs. And when it came to, like, my hands, I decided it was more of a want rather than, than a desire and a need. They kind of came together. But for this particular person, most likely what she's looking is something that is analogous to varicose veins. If you look down and your hand is dependent, in other words, it's below gravity, it's much more likely. And if you notice, she said she looks down at her hands. She doesn't look up at her hands. She looks down at her hands. So most likely, this is venous pooling within the hands, not a sign of disease, not a problem. And she's an athlete, so we know most likely her circulatory system is just fine. So the answer is, keep your hands up. Don't keep them down. And when they are down, don't look at them, because when they turn blue, you're not going to be happy.
800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. Let's keep those voicemails rolling, Zorba. Here's a caller from Philadelphia, PA.
My wife had breast cancer just over 10 years ago. And ever since then, for years, she has a phantom itch in her upper arm bicep area. She's consulted every single person in the world. And, she assumes it's some sort of nerve thing from the mat. She had one mastectomy. But, it's internal, dermatological. I mean, it's just a mystery, but it could keep her up all night. It's maddening. So that's the question. If he has any insight into or heard any other stories about phantom itches from mastectomy. She also had radiation and chemo. So who knows? Anyway, thanks.
Well, it definitely is phantom. This is analogous to phantom limb pain when people have their legs cut off. I had a patient, one of my favorite patients, who died a couple of years ago. And by the way, whenever I talk about patients, I always have asked them, can I talk about you? So I like to always have that whenever I discuss it. He had his leg removed, had a below the knee amputation. First, it was a few toes, then it was his foot, then it was below the knee amputation from diabetes. And he had, for the next 5 to 6 years, he had phantom limb pain. In other words, he would feel pain in his foot wasn't there, pain in his ankle wasn't there, pain in his leg wasn't there. And it was very, very difficult to deal with. And what she has is exactly the same thing. It is not phantom limb pain, but it's phantom itch pain. It doesn't probably come from the nerve, because the nerve is not necessarily there. It actually comes, the theory is that it actually comes from the brain. The brain has a memory for these things, and it can be extremely discomforting. Now, there are a variety of treatments that she can try for this. So, for instance, gabapentin and pregabalin, which are both drugs that we give for seizures, work very well for neuropathic pain. And for some people, that either one of these two drugs can help with phantom limb pain. I would definitely try recommending that. The another drug is called topiramide or Topamax, which is used for migraine headaches, also used for seizures, a different seizure drug that also sometimes will work for phantom limb pain. And then there are the tricyclic antidepressants, amitriptyline and nortriptyline, in very small doses, old-fashioned antidepressants. They can also work for this. And the final thing, if this doesn't work, is to get capsaicin cream. Now, capsaicin is what you find in hot peppers. And get capsaicin cream. It's a counter-irritant, and you wipe that over the area where the itch is, and see whether or not this counter-irritant will start to stimulate nerves and basically make the stimulation of the counter-irritant louder than the phantom itch. Because a phantom itch is basically a pain fiber, in the brain. It thinks the pain fiber is actually firing irregularly. And when you do capsaicin on there, you're actually stimulating these pain fibers to kind of overcome it. Kind of like loud music will overcome soft music in a room. So I would try also capsaicin cream. Lots of things you should try. It's probably never going to go away, because it's been there for so long.
Thanks so much for all the calls at 800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. Call anytime and leave your question on a voicemail. And we'll get back to those calls in just a bit. But first, Zorba, let's talk about something we've been hearing about a lot lately, and that's intermittent fasting.
Yeah, fascinating. A few fascinating issues. So intermittent fasting, the idea is that there's a period of time that you don't eat throughout the day. Okay, intermittent fasting. Or you have days that you don't eat. In other words,
So people do days?
You bet. People may do a day or three quarters of a day. Now, what's interesting, if you look at Ramadan, which is the Muslim holy month, and there, if you are following it and you're religious, you do intermittent fasting throughout the day. You have nothing to eat throughout the day. And then in the evening time, you get together as a family and you eat. And you look whether or not people actually lose weight during that month. And I think some of the initial research may actually come from that. But this particular weight loss approach, the idea of fasting, has given some surprising results. And the reality is, for some people, it really makes sense. In other words, when they do intermittent fasting, they have nothing to eat, we'll say, from 9 o'clock in the morning until 7 o'clock in the evening. They can lose weight. But for other people, it doesn't make sense at all. And so you've got to look at this from a point of view of whether or not it's going to work for you. And the reason is, I want to talk about two patients in my office. So I have one person, he's a truck driver. He weighs in at about 350 pounds, 375. Now I say, well, what do you do? He said, well, in the morning, I have some breakfast. What do you have for breakfast? Well, I have a couple of breakfast bars. Well, first of all, breakfast bars are candy with more peanuts. They're candy. They don't call them candy bars. The candy industry calls them breakfast bars. They say they're filled with protein. Well, the protein happens to be peanuts because peanuts are an inexpensive protein. So he basically has a couple of candy bars in the morning, and then he doesn't eat till he gets home. He's not an over-the-road truck driver. He's a local truck driver. Doesn't eat until about 6 or 7 o'clock at night. And then when you look at his eating pattern, he basically, because he's so hungry, he eats at least two dinners at nighttime. Doesn't realize there are two dinners. Got a dinner, then he snacks and snacks and snacks. So for him, intermittent fasting isn't going to do squat because he's basically eating too much at dinner. But for other people who eat a more Mediterranean diet, who then look at intermittent fasting, they go, I'm not going to have anything throughout the day, but then I'm going to have a delicious tasty meal at night, which I cook, which I'm involved in, and I'm going to watch what I'm eating. That's where it really pays off. So I think you've got to look at intermittent fasting as something that may be useful, may not be useful. Now, Carol, do you ever fast? Have you ever fasted?
I actually, for the past maybe about 3 months, I've been actually doing this. I've been intermittent fasting.
So tell us about it. Go ahead.
I've been following, like, you have an 8-hour window of eating, and you can just move the window however you want, you know, a day to day. Usually I'll stop eating, you know, about 8 o'clock at night and then go all, you know, obviously sleep, get up, skip breakfast, and try to get to about noon, 1 or 2 the next day. And it changes every day. Usually if I can get to 2, that's pretty good. And it was tough. I mean, it was the first week I definitely, my stomach was, you know, I was feeling that for sure. And, but after about a week, my body just adjusted. I don't know if my stomach shrunk or, you know,
no, I think
whatever,
your body adjusts.
It does. Yeah. And now I don't need, I guess, 3 meals a day. I haven't really adjusted what I'm eating. Like I'm still, I still eat some bad stuff and mixed in with good stuff. But,
So why'd you do it?
I heard about, well, I've definitely lost a little bit of weight and I've also heard about just not weight loss benefits, but other benefits like, you know, blood sugar, cholesterol, blood pressure, stuff like that, because the theory is your body goes into kind of a survival mode because it doesn't have any food and it starts to improve itself in different ways. And so, I just want to know what you think of that part of
it. Yeah. So do you feel better?
I do. I definitely do feel better. And I feel better.
You know,
for sure.
I think that's a main part of it. I mean, you know, whether or not the cholesterol, lipids, and other things may change or may not. Remember, when we do a cholesterol, it's a moment in time. You go in once a year, you have your blood taken. Come on. You have 365 days a year, 24/7. How many minutes in the year? And then we do a spot blood check and we expect that's actually going to predict things. Well, it does have some prediction, but it doesn't have a lot of prediction. But if you look at overall, for instance, cholesterol, the numbers vary by up to 10% over a 24-hour period. So they depend on what you're eating and what you're doing. I think if you feel better, if you're feeling like you have more energy, that's worthwhile. And if you're losing some weight, that's worthwhile. And if you're not gaining weight, that's also worthwhile. So I think intermittent fasting has a place in everyone's diet, especially if they want to have more energy and they want to lose weight, they should try it.
Again, the number to call with your question is 800-462-7413. All right, back to those voicemails we go. Let's hear from a caller in Shingle House, Pennsylvania.
Hi, I'm almost 52 years old, And I walk between 3 and 6 miles a day, and I stretch afterward, but I'm really stiff in the evenings and in the mornings when I get up. So I was wondering if maybe Tai Chi would help or if I need to find other stretching videos. Thanks. Bye.
Tai Chi is great. Yoga is great. Getting up, what happens is as we get older, and 52 is older than 32, as we get older, we tend osteoarthritis, and a lot of the things that are precursors to arthritis begin to affect us, and our joints gel up. They don't really gel up, but when we get up, kind of ache a little bit. You know, you look at little kids, they get up, they never ache. You know, our joints and our bodies.
They just jump right up. It's crazy.
They jump right
up. My six-year-old get out of bed, he just jumps right up and starts getting dressed.
Those days are gone for me. That's right. Yeah, that's right. You no longer just jump up and you just no longer get those days gone, but not forgotten. And I've got to tell you, I'm in my 70s and I get up in the morning, I just kind of get up and I kind of ache and I move around. I may look okay, but I really don't feel okay. And for me, I don't feel good for about 20 to 30 minutes in the morning. What do? Those stretching exercises definitely help. Tai Chi definitely helps. Yoga definitely helps. There's so many videos out there that you can look at that will make a big difference. I highly recommend them. Doing it the night before you go to sleep may also be useful. But the reality is doing it in the morning when you get up is going to be the most useful thing that you can do. Or turn back the clock and become 5 years old again and jump out of bed.
800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413 is the number to call. Leave a voicemail. But before we take a break, Zorba, let's fire up another edition of Disagreeing with the Doc.
Disagreeing with the Doc.
Uh-oh, is what that means. Uh-oh, somebody disagrees with you. All right, this email came to us from Paul in New Richmond, Wisconsin. Paul writes, "Dear Tom and Dr. Zorba, my wife and I frequently listen to your truly enjoyable and helpful program."
Thank you.
"On a recent show, Dr. Zorba was commenting on the effective and creative use of duct tape to remove warts. You, Tom," he's talking to Tom, "suggested that this
you're
was...
You're not Tom.
No, I'm not. No.
That's right.
You, Tom, suggested that this was, quote unquote, MacGyver-like. Remember MacGyver? Remember that show?
Yeah, you bet.
"While your analogy was understood, I believe your comparison was an egregious misrepresentation." Ah, this is egregious.
A MacGyver. Okay.
This is okay, a MacGyver fan, I think.
These are the MacGyver police.
Yeah, okay. The MacGyver squad. MacGyver was an individual of high intellect who possessed a huge amount of scientific knowledge and displayed great creativity with the use of numerous everyday items, including his always available...
He was an Einstein. He was a Da Vinci. He was a Rembrandt, all rolled into one. And you know what? He was even a cartoon character. And you know what was something else? He actually didn't exist. He was an actor. But please, go on.
Imagine if Einstein were in the 80s, had stonewashed denim and a mullet. That's basically MacGyver. All right.
I'm trying to imagine Einstein in a mullet.
And stonewashed jeans. Paul goes on. What was he saying there? Oh, yeah. He had a lot of creativity and with the use of numerous everyday items, including his always available Swiss Army knife. So Paul continues. "I believe a better superlative would be that of red-green. Red, of course, is the handyman who is constantly looking for inexpensive shortcuts to various projects using the handyman's secret weapon, duct tape."
That's right. You know something? He's right. We have to substitute MacGyvering for red-green. That's exactly right. You're right. Red-green's secret weapon was duct tape. Absolutely. And, you know, whenever he dies, I believe he's still alive, I bet he'll be buried in a duct tape coffin.
Whoa, that sounds interesting.
I don't mean this to be a downer. I mean, no. I'm still around.
I gotta finish Paul's email here. Sorry.
Go ahead. I don't mean to interrupt. Please go on.
Okay, Paul goes on. "Since Mr. Green is also the star of the feature film Duct Tape Forever, I trust you will concur."
Duct Tape Forever. Now, did you miss that film?
Yeah, I missed it. It was on the other day. I couldn't watch it, so I taped it. All right. Paul goes on. I trust you will concur that this is more analogous and why I have to disagree with the host.
You know something? I'll take that as a compliment.
Yeah, you should. Do you disagree with the good doc or the host? And more importantly, was it caught on tape?
Whoa.
Let us know. Yeah, that's the important part. Let us know by posting on our Facebook page, or you can always send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
More of your calls to come. We'll be dropping into Tom Clark's Kitchen of Wonders for the recipe segment, and we'll read some more listener emails. All that coming up on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX. Carl Christensen filling in for Tom Clark on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Now, this is the moment all of you foodies out there have been waiting for, the moment where we get a rare glimpse into local celebrity chef Tom Clark's mysterious kitchen. So let's head over there now, where he and Zorba are busy putting together a mouth-watering recipe for barbecue pineapple chicken kebabs.
Yeah, Carl, don't go too far away because this is a shorty. So just kind of hang in here.
So do you like barbecue?
I do.
So let's talk a little bit about this recipe. So I want to talk about a couple of what we choose, exactly what we choose in the recipe. So okay. Start out with a 2/3 cup of barbecue sauce.
2/3 cup barbecue sauce.
Now, for people who like barbecue, they usually pick a barbecue sauce they like. And years ago, I went and I tried different barbecue sauces and different teriyaki sauces, and I bought a half a dozen to find one that I like. And I'll tell you, the barbecue sauce that I've been loved is Sweet Baby Ray's, and it's all over the place, and I love it.
Okay.
Now, the same thing is true for teriyaki sauce. The Kiko Mints teriyaki sauce is my favorite, one of my favorite teriyaki sauces. Once again, I went and I tried 10 different teriyaki sauces until I found one that didn't have too much salt and had just the right amount of sweetness. So when you're making this recipe, 2/3 cup of barbecue sauce, 2/3 cup of teriyaki sauce, choose your sauces well.
Okay.
Now, to that, we add 3 cloves of garlic that are minced.
3 cloves garlic minced.
That's right. 1 tablespoon of freshly grated ginger.
Big T, freshly grated ginger.
2 pounds of boneless, skinless chicken breast cut into 1-inch chunks.
2 pounds boneless, skinless chicken breasts cut into 1-inch chunks.
That's right. 2 cups of fresh pineapple cut into chunks. And if you don't have fresh, you can, of course, use pineapple that's in a can that you cut. Mm-hmm. And you want to do pineapple in water in the can, not pineapple in syrup, if you're going to do that.
2 cups of pineapple.
1 red bell pepper cut into 1.5-inch pieces.
A red bell pepper cut into 1.5-inch pieces.
That's right. A nice sweet onion cut into 1.5-inch pieces.
A what? Sweet onion?
What's that? A good onion. You know, a sweet onion. You know,
I know whether it's sweet or not?
I'll tell you. White onions tend to be sweeter than yellow onions. Yellow onions tend to be a little bit more vibrant and robust. Red onions are, I think, of somewhere in between. So I would probably use a white onion on this because it'll be a sweeter. The Vidalia onions, by the way, are always sweet. But in the end, it'll work. But I would pick a white onion probably for this.
That's 1.5-inch pieces.
2 tablespoonfuls of olive oil or canola oil.
2 big T, olive or canola oil.
And some kosher salt and freshly ground black pepper to taste.
Kosher salt, freshly ground black pepper to taste.
That's right. So let's make it. In a medium bowl, combine the barbecue sauce, teriyaki sauce, the garlic, and the ginger, and reserve a half cup. Take a half cup out of that bowl, put that off to the side. We're going to use that later. Then in a gallon Ziploc bag or a large bowl, combine the rest of the barbecue sauce, the chicken, and marinate it for at least 2 hours. But frankly, put it in the night before and just marinate it overnight. If you've got it in the Ziploc gallon bag, which is better, just turn that bag over occasionally. So basically, the chicken is really in that marinade. It really very, very important. Then, when you're all finished, like the next day, 2 hours or 8 hours later, drain the chicken from the marinade, take it out of the marinade, thread the chicken onto basically a kebab stick. So it's chicken, pineapple, bell pepper, onion, and then brush it with olive oil or canola oil. Put a little salt and pepper on the top of it. Preheat the grill to medium heat if using a gas grill. If using charcoal, get that up to medium heat. Add the skewers to the grill. Cook, turning occasionally until the chicken is completely cooked through with an internal temperature of about 165 degrees. And you'll get an idea of about that is. That's roughly about 10 minutes, maybe 12 minutes a little. And then when it comes out, brush the skewers then with the reserved barbecue sauce and cook for another 1 to 2 minutes. So the idea is that you're putting that other barbecue sauce on the top of it for the last minute or two. And you can't put it on top for the whole time because it will tend to burn. That's why you're only doing it for the last 1 or 2 minutes after the chicken is cooked. Serve it maybe with a little bit of quinoa or a little bit of brown rice or white rice or some noodles. And you've got a wonderful dish that is perfect this time of year.
My mouth is watering.
So, you know, I think some people had trouble in their car writing this on a sheet of paper, don't you?
So what can they do?
They can come to our website. That's ZorbaPastor.org. That's ZorbaPastor.org, or of course through Facebook.
Yeah, this is a yummy one. If you fix that, I'll come over to eat it.
You got it, Tom. I'm going to do it. I'm going to have you and Monica come over, and we will have a wonderful barbecue pineapple chicken kebab.
And look, here's Carl. He's been waiting in the wings. So, Carl, come on in and finish up the show.
Thanks a lot, Tom. 800-462-7413 is the number to call anytime to leave a question for Dr. Zorba. And let's get back to those voicemails now. Here's a listener who lives just a mere 700 miles away from the birthplace of oatmeal pitchman Wilford Brimley. They're just 700 miles away. He was born in Salt Lake City. This is not Salt Lake City. This is a caller in Liberty Lake, Washington.
I have a question about calcium from food. My daughter recently is seeing a new doctor, a naturopath doctor, and she's been asked not to have pasteurized milk, to exclude that from her diet. She's typically drank skim milk. And we're wondering, they said that if you do want milk, to have it unpasteurized, which we're not crazy about doing because of the risks there. Plus, it would be whole milk, so the fat content. But we're wondering about, is there other foods that are best for calcium, whether that be leafy greens or whatever, or what's Dr. Pastor's opinion of non-pasteurized milk? And also, is there a concern with pasteurized milk? There seems to be this concern that it's a processed product and that somehow the pasteurization does something to the milk that is not desirable. Thank you.
Well, first of all, pasteurized milk is a processed product. And the reason why we pasteurize milk is milk would spread disease to children. For instance, tuberculosis was commonly spread to children through milk because cows get tuberculosis, and tuberculosis was spread through milk, as well as listeria and a bunch of other things. So I do not recommend drinking unpasteurized milk. Now, there are people who say, well, if you know the farmer and you know the cow, and then you can drink it unpasteurized, yeah, maybe if you know the farmer and you know know the cow? How well do you really know the farmer? How well do you know the cow? How do you know where it actually comes from? So I'm definitely against it. So does it destroy things? Yeah, it destroys bacteria, destroys some things that are bad for you. Does it destroy some things that are good for you? Perhaps. We don't really know that. I mean, there's no evidence that it destroys anything good, but the fact is you don't have to drink milk in order to get calcium. So first of all, if you want to get it from foods, go to Google, look at calcium-containing products. So there are a lot of people in the world who don't drink dairy products and their bones are just fine. So Google it and find other ways to do that. Now, skim milk basically gets rid of all the fat. Whole milk has fat within it. And we have for years have said, don't drink whole milk because you want to cut down on the fat. And the answer is yes. However, small amounts of whole milk are not really bad. I mean, I've gone to having whole milk with my cereal because I love the taste. I'm not drinking 4 glasses a day, folks. I'm having some of my cereal. I have half and half of my coffee. How much dairy fat am I actually getting? And the answer is not a lot. I like the taste. So if you're going to have, if you end up drinking, having dairy products, they should be pasteurized. And of course, she can go to cheese, she can go to yogurt, she can go to other products that are going to be just as safe. Yogurt, when you make it, you're basically warming the milk broth and you're getting rid of all the bacteria when you're actually manufacturing yogurt. So that would be something that would be a calcium containing product that would be healthy for her.
800-462-7413. That's the number to call. 800-462-7413. Let's hear now from a caller in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma.
So a question here this morning, they're talking about coffee and exercise boosting memory. So drinking coffee in the morning, does it have to be in the morning? I usually start my day with tea, a cup of tea, then later at work, I drink a coffee, a cup. My question is that drinking coffee has to be right in the morning, or the time doesn't matter here? Thank you. Have a great day.
Time is irrelevant. And the tea that you actually drink in the morning may also have some caffeine in it. It's really the caffeine that does it. But the time is irrelevant. And from my point of view, I like waking up. I always have brewed coffee in the morning when I get up, a cup or two. And I'm careful because I love coffee and I have to make sure I don't drink too much of it. But for instance, usually at about 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock, if I'm at home in my home office, I'll have a shot of espresso because I've got a little machine. If I'm in my office working and seeing patients, I'll have another shot of coffee. And then I usually do another one at like 3 or 4 in the afternoon. So I love caffeine. I make sure that I have it. I don't have too much of it. Anytime during the day is useful. And remember, coffee is the most commonly used drug, that is caffeine, in the world. And I want to remind you, when the Dutch came to New York, the beverage of choice for the New Englanders when they got up in the morning was rum. They got up and they had a glass of rum. The Dutch got up and they had a cup of coffee. Who do you think got things done more, the New Englanders or the Dutch? And you know what? I'll give you 30 seconds to think about the answer to that question.
Is this going to be 30 seconds of dead air while people think?
Da, 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 da,
okay, good.
Da, 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 da.
All right. I'm just going to leave that hanging there. 800-462-7413. Call anytime. Leave a voicemail for Zorba. And Zorba, we get so many calls from our wonderful listeners who have so many great questions. And we also get calls from helpful listeners who just want to share a comment or a health tip. So we made some time for those listeners in a segment we call Caller Comments.
This is a bunch of caller comments. People calling us with their health tips.
Yes, we do. We do appreciate it. First up, Zorba, let's hear from a caller now in Wisconsin.
Hi, I had an idea about an incentive plan to inspire people to get their COVID vaccine. Why can't the insurance companies come up with a positive feedback incentive if you get your COVID vaccine? Thank you for your time.
I think that's a good idea. But as you can imagine, when it comes to insurance companies, there are a number of things that are involved. First of all, money. Where are they going to get the money? Are they going to give it back as feedback? Insurance companies never want to, never want to part with money. And then when it comes to anything having to do with COVID and something like that, you have politics. So you have the mixture of money and politics, which tends to be toxic. So the fact that you even think they might do it is great, but I don't think that's in the cards. I doubt it very much, even though I heartily support it.
And finally, Zorba, here is a caller from, and this is the birthplace of one of my favorite actors, John Candy. Are you a John Candy fan?
You bet. You bet.
He's great. He's amazing. This is a caller from Ontario, Canada.
The ukulele did not originate in Hawaii. It originated in Portugal and was taken to Hawaii by the Portuguese at a very early date. Thank you.
Oh, wow.
This one's on me, I think. I'm pretty sure this is from a previous show where I was mispronouncing ukulele. I was saying ukulele, which is what a lot of people say.
That's right. Yeah, a lot of people got upset with that. I know. You even had hate mail that came in there and said, how could you possibly mispronounce that? But, so it came from Portugal. It's interesting because we don't think of the Portuguese as playing the ukulele. Sorry, I almost mispronounced it. But on the other hand, how many people do I know from Portugal versus Hawaii? Not too many. Not too many.
That's pretty cool. Thanks for the fun facts.
Thanks.
800-462-7413 is the number to call anytime. But before we take a quick break, Zorba, let's check in again with your favorite hair splitters and fault finders. These are the Grammar Police.
Oh, no, it's the Grammar Police.
And actually, Zorba, we're going to hear from the most easily feather-ruffled and persnickety faction within the Grammar Police. This is from the Pronunciation Police.
Oh, you know.
You remember them?
Oh, I remember them quite well.
They are tough.
They stop me on the street and they go, wait a minute, that's a TH sound, not a T sound. Oh, it's terrible. It's terrible. Day and night, they hound me on my pronunciation. I can't believe it. And, you know, I don't have a posh English accent. That's the real problem. But please, go on.
This infraction came to us via a Facebook message from Wendy in Flora Home, Florida. And I really do hope I'm pronouncing that right. Flora Home, Florida.
Let me tell you, if you're not, you'll hear about it.
Wendy will let me know. Please, Wendy out there, let me know if I'm saying Flora Home,
Florida. And the other Floridians.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, this is what Wendy writes. Zorba, it's pronounced Pronunciation Police. Tisk, tisk. I love your show, by the way. Thanks, Wendy.
Thank you. It's pronunciation versus
pronunciation. Yeah, I have trouble with this. I always say pronunciation, but it's definitely pronunciation.
Well, wait a second. Maybe they say pronunciation in Florida, but in Wisconsin, we say pronunciation.
But look at the spelling. Exactly, it's N-U-N. This kind of, I looked it up. It was like, yeah, what is spelling?
Look at the spelling of through. T-H-R-O-U-G-H. I mean, come on. Can you pronounce thruga? I mean, come on. Look at the spelling about a lot of things. Spelling. I mean, you know, spelling, pronunciation, tomato, tomato. I mean, you know, let's call the whole thing off.
I got to say, Zorba, this is definitely one of the most meta segments of getting, you know, the pronunciation, saying pronunciation wrong.
Well, you know, the real issue is I don't want to sound like a prig when it comes to pronunciation. And if you notice, I very carefully pronounce the word prig.
All right. I'll do my best here in reading this. Did Zorba mispronounce something on the radio shoe? Please let us know by posting on our Facebook page, or you can always send us an email at
zabar@wpr.org. That's zabar@wpr.org.
All right. We have
Zabar.
Okay. We have more of your calls to come. We have another topic to discuss, and Zorba will be answering more of your emails. All that coming up on Zorba Pasture on Your Health from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. We'll be right back. Carl Christensen filling in for Tom Clark on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. 800-462-7413 is the number to call, where anytime you can leave a voicemail for Dr. Zorba. But before we hear from more of our listeners, Zorba, tell us about new research published about how psilocybin may give people relief from depression symptoms.
Well, first of all, let's look at the history of psychedelics. You've heard of Timothy Leary, obviously, right, Carl?
Yep, I have.
Did you? And you knew what he was at Harvard initially as a psychologist. Did you know that?
I did know that, actually,
And the reason was they were doing research into LSD. Now, LSD was first discovered by the Sandoz company when they were looking for a better migraine headache. A cure. And basically, it's a derivative of ergot. And ergot was one of the drugs that was used for that. Ergot is a plant product. Psilocybin, which comes from magic mushrooms, is also a plant product. And so they were doing research into psychosis. They were doing research into migraine headache. As you can imagine, it became a drug of abuse. And the feds put it in the same category as heroin. I mean, let's make sure it's like heroin. We're not even going to touch it. And so for the last 50 years, they've not been able to do research. Now, as you can imagine, major depression is still a problem. You know about that, right, Carl?
Definitely, yes.
How about PTSD? Big issue, right?
PTSD issue.
A lot of things going on with war. And so they're starting to do research on uses of doses of, among other things, psilocybin, which come from magic mushrooms, in small doses and medium doses to see whether or not it might be very useful. This particular study, published in the New England Journal of Medicine, compared psychotherapy, standard psychotherapy using antidepressants alone, and then using various doses of psilocybin, microdoses and larger doses. So we're not really talking about it necessarily a psilocybin trip, although that has been useful and that's also being studied, but in small doses. And they're finding that it actually may help people as well as antidepressants, but it might actually be better. So what do you think about something like that, Carl?
I think that's great for people and scary for Big Pharma.
Well, it's scary for Big Pharma, but it's not scary if you're going to have a dose that might be manufactured that might be useful. But it is scary. Big Pharma, we've got lots of very inexpensive antidepressants. You can buy an antidepressant for $4 a month at a regular drugstore. The scary issue is that the feds are worried that if something like this becomes useful, how do they actually control it? Because they're afraid that it actually will get into the environment and all of a sudden become a drug of abuse. When reality, the drug of abuse are narcotics. The things that are killing people are opioids. And the fact is, if they can regulate opioids, if they can regulate marijuana, which they're doing in many states and allowing it to become out there, if they're regulating alcohol, they can regulate things like psilocybin. And I think we need more research on this, because more and more we're discovering that the use of psychedelics in differing amounts may help people who suffer from major depression and who suffer from PTSD. And I think it's time for more research, and it's not being done until the feds take it off Schedule 1 list and move it down to a Schedule 2 or Schedule 3. That's where it should be.
800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. Let's get back to more of your voicemails. Here's one from a caller in Springfield, Missouri.
Hello. I have scheduled an appointment with a urologist over a high PSA test for prostate cancer. And I am curious if Dr. Zorba could please talk about all the ads that you see on TV for prostate problems and differentiate between the prostate problems that they're selling the medicines for on TV as opposed to the actually having prostate cancer. I'm really confused, and I could definitely use a little bit of feedback from somebody that knows what they're talking about, like the doctor. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much for that comment. I try to do research. I do research all the time to come up with good, reliable answers that make scientific sense. So first of all, the stuff you see on TV, let's just talk about that. They're talking about overactive bladder, enlarged prostate, how men won't have to get up in the middle of the night to pee as much. That's most of the stuff that's on TV. The other stuff, of course, on TV is erectile dysfunction. So those are basically the two things. You see very, very little, if anything, on TV that has to do with prostate cancer. Now, the issue with prostate cancer is very interesting. So first of all, the feds have said screening for prostate cancer does not prolong lives. Now, it does prolong lives for people who have prostate cancer. In other words, if you've got prostate cancer, you have the surgery or radiation, the chances you're going to die from prostate cancer are greatly reduced. But it turns out when you look 10, 15 years, 20 years down the line, many of those people die of something else. Those men die of heart disease or stroke or some other form of cancer. And so the feds gave screening for prostate cancer for most men a flunking grade because it's not clear that we're actually saving lives. On the other hand, once you have an elevated PSA, that's a whole different story. You have to go in, meet with urologist, you've got to get a biopsy, and then you've got to make a decision. And that's what I think is important for you to do. So the stuff on TV basically is for an enlarged prostate, but what you have to do is you've got to go to a urologist and figure out what's your next step. How elevated is the PSA? Now, PSA can also be elevated with prostatitis, with an enlarged prostate, and quite often we simply take serial elevations and see whether or not it's going up. And I've got a number of men in my practice who have had elevated PSAs negative on the prostate cancer actual biopsy, and they continue to have it. Why? Because the test is not that reliable test in that it doesn't mean you've got prostate cancer, and it doesn't tell us as much as we need. Go to that urologist. That's where you're going to get the best information.
800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. All right, Zorba, let's crack open the Zorba Pastor On Your Health inbox and share a listener email. This question came to us from a listener named Vicky, who writes, "Dear Dr. Zorba, I was cleaning out my fridge and I found some deli meat I forgot to eat. It was freshly sliced when I purchased it, so not prepackaged and sealed. I smelled it and tasted a tiny bite and everything seemed fine, but I threw it out anyway because I'm afraid of foodborne illness only because my mom always made us eat lunch meat before it went bad, quote unquote, when I was a kid. My question is, why does deli meat need to be tossed so quickly, and is it really not safe to eat if it tastes and smells fine? Are there certain types of meats you should throw away before others? And salami seems like it would last longer because it's my favorite. Don't judge me and my nitrates," Vicky says.
Well, first of all, the reality is if you look at the new FDA guidelines, when they talk to the FDA and the registered dietitians, if it smells good and it looks good and it tastes good, it is good. Okay. And the expiration dates that they put on for a few reasons. First of all, there's CYA. And Carl, you know what CYA means. Cover your
aioli?
Your derriere. That's what it means.
So, there you go.
But anyway, the issue is it's really the companies that want to make sure they're covered and there's no relationship, you know, and they want to make sure there's absolutely no chance that you're going to get an illness. But yes, if it comes out of the refrigerator and it smells okay, then it probably is okay. And things with nitrates and nitrites, which are basically meats of that sort and sausages, are going to last a long time in the refrigerator. So if you smell it and it's good and it tastes good, you can eat it. And your mom, hard to tell you, but your mom was not exactly right.
that's a good way.
I did
way
it right.
Say that.
Not
do
exactly
you ever push your deli meat a couple days past expiration?
I don't look at the expiration dates.
You just eat it.
No,
all.
I smell it. If it smells so well, I don't eat it all. I smell it. If it's got mold on it, sure. I don't eat it. And if it doesn't smell right or the texture isn't right, you know, it's slimy. You know, I know obviously, which means something has grown on it. But no, if it smells good and it looks good, no, I eat it. I don't, you know, something I have to tell you, I have never looked, I don't look at the expiration dates of things. But I had my daughter come home and she threw out the mustard because she said it was beyond
the expiration
date.
Oh, that stuff can go years, right?
Mustard can go forever. It can probably go for 50 years. And I thought, you're throwing out mustard because it has an expiration date? Please.
Have a healthy living question for Zorba. Just post it on our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
800-462-7413 is the number to call. Leave us a voicemail. Back to those voicemails now. Let's hear from Beaver Dam, Wisconsin.
I have recently been diagnosed with multiple lipomas. They have been diagnosed. They all say they're benign. But is there anything I can do to prevent more lipomas or lessen them, because some of the lipomas feel like they're starting to push on some of the nerves. They're right below the surface of the skin, and I'm just wondering if there's a oil or something more natural that I can do to either lessen them, or if it's something I'm eating that I'm getting these lipomas. Thank you, and I will be listening to you for the answer.
Unfortunately, the answer is there isn't anything. Lipomas tend to run in families. So often, if I have a patient with lots of lipomas, I'll say, your mom and dad, did they have lipomas? And 90% of the time, at least they go, yeah, they have lipomas too. And they grow in their collections of fat, little bubbles of fat. And sometimes they can be quite large and have to be removed because they are so big. They're benign. They're not cancerous. And unfortunately, there is no known way to prevent it from happening. And so for many people, they sort of have to live with it. And if they become uncomfortable, those are the ones that are removed. Or if they grow big, sometimes I send them to a surgeon to get them removed. So unfortunately, I don't know of anything. And if there's anyone out there in Radioland who knows of something, please send it to our Facebook page or to Zorba at WPR.org.
800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. Call anytime and leave a voicemail for Dr. Zorba. But before we hit the highway, let's do that segment where a real life doctor, that's you, Zorba, by the way, just to let you know, real life doctor takes on the mighty internet. This is called Google Doc. All right, the following email came to us from Adam in Buffalo, New York. Adam writes, "Hi, Dr. Zorba. Love the show. I have a question regarding sleep quality and vaccine efficacy. The fact that sleep quality affects immune response seems to be well established, but it made me wonder, could a night or more of poor sleep affect the production of the antibodies necessary to make a vaccine effective? I did a bit of preliminary internet research. I know, your favorite, Zorba. and there seems to be some evidence that this is true. So let's say I got a poor night's sleep the night before receiving the COVID-19 vaccine. Should I be concerned that the vaccine is now going to be less effective?"
I doubt if sleep really is an issue here. We know that sleep is an issue in overall health. We know that it's really important to keep your body healthy. But when it comes to immune response from a vaccine, first of all, I don't think there's any research out there that's reliable at all that shows that's the case. The real issue is that some people have a more robust response than others. But that's why, for instance, for the Pfizer and Moderna COVID vaccines, we give a booster to get that immune response up there. But I don't think sleep is a major player here. I don't think it'll really make a difference. And remember that an immune response takes place over a period, really, of at least 28 days, if not, you know, 2 or 3 months. So it's not as if one bad night or two bad nights are really going to make a difference. But the research on sleep and vaccine efficacy is scant at best.
Have a question for Dr. Z, 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 Z. Sorry, it's a sleep pun. Well, he'll give it a shot. Just post on our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
All right, stay well, Zorba.
You stay well, Carl.
I will, I'll try. If you missed anything during the show or you just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org or, of course, through Facebook.
And don't forget, you can call us anytime to leave us your question or voicemail at 800-462-7413. And please do visit the Zorba Pastor on Your Health Facebook page for Zorba's frequent coronavirus updates. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is me, Carl Christensen. Our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor and Tom Clark, I'm Carl Christensen asking you to join us on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Did you miss something on today's show? Simply go to ZorbaPastor.org to catch up on all things Zorba. There you will find recipes from the show, links to the Facebook page, Zorba's Healthy Living articles, and you can subscribe to the weekly podcast. On the web, that's ZorbaPastor.org.